Like it or not, the senior and elderly population is vulnerable to negligence committed by medical professionals, nursing home and assisted living facilities, pharmaceutical and medical device companies, insurance companies, and everyday individuals and businesses. The Injured Senior Podcast is here to help. Steve Heisler is the creator of the National Injured Senior Law Center and has been advocating for seniors' rights for over 20 years. You have questions, and Steve Heisler has answers. This is the Injured Senior Podcast.
Hello, Injured Senior community. This is Stephen Heisler, founder and CEO of the National Injured Senior Law Center. And I want to welcome you to this week's episode of the Injured Senior Podcast. Now, the Injured Senior Podcast is a weekly show where we discuss issues of vital importance to the injured senior and elderly population and to the children and loved ones of injured senior and elderly. I am your humble host. And again, welcome. Sadly, the senior and elderly population in the United States are taken advantage of by the medical, pharmaceutical, long-term care, medical device, and financial institutions. We make it a top priority on this podcast to educate our listeners on how to not become an injured senior. I want to thank the National Injured Senior Law Center for its kind sponsorship of this podcast. There are over 100 million people in the United States over the age of 50, and the National Injured Senior Law Center are the legal advocates for the aging population in America. So, retired firefighters and first responders are part of our injured senior community. Obviously, firefighting is one of the most dangerous occupations in the world. Firefighters, my friends, are vulnerable to burns, smoke inhalation, crush injuries from collapsing structures. They can suffer from heat exhaustion as well as long-term occupational health conditions such as asthma, chronic coughing, heart disease, cancer, and lung damage. Surprisingly, injured senior community, cancer is presently the number one cause of job-related deaths for career firefighters. And one of the top causes of cancer for firefighters is asbestos contamination. Here to talk to us today about career firefighters and their risk of asbestos contamination is Sean Marchese. Now, if that name sounds familiar to you, it's because Sean was a guest on episode 15 of this podcast talking about the dangers of asbestos to the senior and elderly community. Sean is a registered nurse at the Mesothelioma Center at asbestos.com with experiencing developing and managing respiratory oncology clinical trials and treatments. As a medical writer, he helps patients learn about new therapies in the fight against mesothelioma. Welcome back, Sean. How are you today?
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here again. I'm really glad to be on your show and talk about one of the most important communities in the first responder population, and one that's unfortunately at a high risk for developing cancer and long-term disease in the line of duty.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I just didn't think that cancer was the number one cause of deaths. I would think it would be like burning up in a fire or catching on fire or smoke inhalation. Why is it, in your opinion, that the top cause of deaths in career firefighters is cancer?
Right. It's actually a pretty startling statistic. Current research actually shows that 2/3 of firefighters over the course of their career end up developing cancer. So that's a rate of about 68% for this population. And that's compared to about 22% of the general population that develops cancer. So the question, why do firefighters have such a higher risk of cancer? And why is this such a big deal, for what they do? And I think it comes down to the fact that, these men and women are putting themselves in extreme danger over and over. And like you said, why not burning? Why not collapses and things like that? And I think ultimately it comes down to, because these are trained professionals and, you know, they know how to avoid these situations. But unfortunately, when you're engulfed in smoke and toxic chemicals, there is very little you can do to avoid that outside of your safety equipment and knowing how to reduce that risk. But over time, that exposure builds up, and you know, there's little someone can do to escape the long-term damages that are being done to your body from toxic chemicals like asbestos fibers, even microscopic glass fibers that are released into the air. Again, if the full suite of safety materials isn't being used at these sites, then chronic exposure over many different episodes is going to lead to long-term diseases and cancer.
Okay, and we're going to get to ways that firefighters can protect themselves a little later in the show. But let me ask you this. So mesothelioma is a cancer, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
All right, and it comes from asbestos contamination. Is that right?
That's right. Mesothelioma is a cancer of the lining of either the chest cavity or the lining of the abdominal cavity. And asbestos fibers, when they're inhaled or ingested, can get stuck in that tissue lining. And then over several decades, they wear away at the healthy tissue and damage healthy cells and cause tumors in that mesothelioma space.
So cancer is, unfortunately, is not unique to at least two-thirds of career firefighters. What percentage of the cancer that firefighters are coming down with, what percentage of that is mesothelioma as opposed to any other type of cancer?
Right. Well, firefighters are about 2.5 times more likely to develop mesothelioma compared to the regular population. About 3,000 new cases of mesothelioma are diagnosed every year in the United States, and that rate is about 2.5 times higher in firefighters. So mesothelioma itself is typically a rare disease, but we definitely see an increase in those numbers with firefighters and other first responders as well.
Okay, so do we know how what percentage of those cancers are actually meso, or you just don't have the statistics on that?
I don't have the exact percentage number, but you know, again, of the 68% of firefighters that develop cancer, they're developing mesothelioma at a rate 2.5 times higher than the general population.
Got it. So, can you tell our listeners a little bit about mesothelioma in general, and you talked about this on episode 15 when you were here last time, but just as a refresher for anybody who has not heard that episode, can you talk a little bit about mesothelioma?
Yeah, absolutely. The most prominent cause of mesothelioma comes from asbestos, which is a naturally occurring mineral that forms in the earth. But it's been used over the past few centuries for consumer products, household construction, all types of materials, up until its restrictions in the 1980s. So typically, asbestos in its solid form, when it's contained in these materials, doesn't pose a risk. But as damage occurs to these structures, as even natural asbestos is degraded or wears away, it releases microscopic fibers that look like small needles or barbs that are easy to inhale in a dust form, and they get stuck in the tissue lining of most commonly the chest cavity, but they can also end up in the abdominal cavity or other areas of the body too. And as these fibers are stuck in the healthy tissue, your body can't get rid of them, and they develop inflammation and damage healthy DNA in the cells of that tissue. So as inflammation occurs over several years, it leads to DNA breakdown and a higher chance to develop tumors.
Okay. And what is the mortality rate for just individuals in general that come down with meso?
Unfortunately, it's pretty high. Mesothelium is a pretty deadly disease, and the average life expectancy of mesothelioma patients is about 1 to 2 years with treatment, depending on, you know, where they have it and the type of treatment that's available to them. The mortality rate is pretty high. For patients that have localized mesothelioma, which means it hasn't spread to somewhere else in the body, they have about a 20% five-year survival rate, which means that about 20% of meso patients are able to live 5 years or more if their cancer is localized. For patients that progress their disease and have distant metastasis, only about 8% of patients live beyond 5 years.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Sean. That's just a terrible statistic. I take it that is applicable as well to firefighters?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, because of what they do on a day-to-day basis, they might have additional respiratory complications on top of disease like mesothelioma. So things such as lung tissue scarring, COPD are all illnesses that can exist alongside a cancer like mesothelioma.
So, yeah, that kind of raises the question for me as to what about the masks, the respirators that they're wearing, wouldn't that protect them from inhaling the asbestos fibers?
Ideally, it does, yes. Anything that's an N95 certified mask or higher will filter out asbestos fibers. The trouble comes from situations where the equipment is either unavailable, which is like a worst case situation, or that it's unable to be applied properly at the scene, or it becomes damaged in some way. So there's lots of situations where they might a firefighter might not have the appropriate equipment applied.
Right. This podcast is the Injured Senior podcast, and I stress the word senior. Mm-hmm. So you talk about career firefighters who are now in their 60s or 70s. Did they have the same technology for the respirators and the protective equipment back in the 1970s or 1980s?
No, almost certainly not. Another problem, too, is that a lot of the dangers of asbestos weren't well known back then. So a lot of times coming out of disaster scenes of older houses or older buildings, the dangers of asbestos that was still on their uniforms, right, on their equipment, wasn't well known. So these firefighters may have not been decontaminating properly and spreading fibers to other coworkers or even members of their family if they were to bring their equipment home and things like that. So it's not necessarily a case of being exposed at the scene, but also decontaminating the area and making sure that it doesn't spread anywhere. Yeah. N95 mask wasn't invented until the 1990s. So again, the respirator technology wasn't where it is now for firefighters.
And you're seeing firefighters or former firefighters in their 60s and 70s now who are being diagnosed with mesothelioma and the other diseases?
Yeah, most about. Definitely. And in fact, one of the biggest populations for first responders and firefighters that are now at older adults and entering their senior years are those who were involved in the 9/11 attacks too. A huge population of first responders were affected when those towers fell by the dust cloud that remained in the air for days, many, many days. And those firefighters and first responders on the scene then, it's now been almost 20 years later, a lot of them are approaching their 50s and 60s and older. And that's around the time that mesothelioma takes to develop within the body. It can show up 20 to 40 years later. So a lot of the older adult population is beginning to see some of those diseases take root.
Yeah, that's terrible. We know that, or I believe you said that mesothelioma is not the only condition that can come to firefighters or that firefighters experience as a result of asbestos exposure. Mm-hmm. Asbestosis, can you tell our listeners what asbestosis is? And that's also a condition that can come from the exposure, correct?
Absolutely. Asbestosis is a form of pulmonary fibrosis, which means it's a type of long-term scarring in the lungs. So as scar tissue builds up, it can cause a thickening of the pleural lining, which surrounds the outside of the lungs and makes the lung tissue stiffer, making it harder for you to take a deep breath, for you to inhale and exhale. So if you can't take those deep, full breaths, your oxygen level starts going down. And then you have issues with chronic symptoms of decreased oxygen. And that can affect everything from your neurological system to your metabolism to developing other types of cancers. So there's a lot of long-term effects of a chronic illness like asbestosis.
Does it kind of mimic COPD?
Yeah, it does. It can have a lot of the same symptoms as COPD for sure.
And you could not have smoked one cigarette in your life, but career firefighters are coming down with asbestosis and the pleural thickening. And it's all the result, in your opinion, of the asbestos.
That's right. And not just asbestos either. Again, when, you know, buildings collapse and have been burning for a long time, there are glass fibers, wooden fibers, all types of plastic smokes, toxins that are just accumulate as gas and smoke in the air. And all of these things lead to COPD, pleural thickening, lung cancer, and just a myriad of long-term diseases.
I guess the next issue is, well, we know what the problem is for firefighters. How can they protect themselves? If you're a firefighter now, currently working, what can you do to protect yourself from asbestos exposure?
Yep. Again, the equipment is going to be the number one thing that helps lower this risk on a day-to-day basis. They have now, thankfully, self-contained breathing apparatus, or the scuba equipment, same thing that scuba divers use, that helps keep their face mostly protected from smoke and fire in the immediate area and helps them breathe in clean oxygen. As you know, as firefighters go through debris looking for anybody who might still be stuck in a fire, or cleaning out areas that need to be, that need fires extinguished immediately. Minimizing the risk of disturbances in the area, things that could release bigger clouds of smoke or degrade structures more easily, are things that firefighters can do to minimize the amount of dust and debris in the air too. I mentioned decontamination, and again, that's still an issue that firefighters need to be aware about and take care of their equipment and their uniforms after every single event, and especially before leaving the site of a fire, too. They should wash their tools, their entire uniform and all of their equipment so that it doesn't contaminate clean equipment or get transferred to other people in the vicinity.
You're saying at the actual fire site, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, fire trucks will have the equipment to decontaminate equipment either through just washing thoroughly or sealing it in some kind of like a contained bag to bring it back to the station.
How can they protect their families from these toxic materials?
Yeah, the most important thing is to not bring home anything that was present at the site of the fire. Secondary exposure is a cause for a significant portion of mesothelioma cases among women and children, especially. Historically, engineering and industry jobs were held by men, and they would bring toxic dust and exposure home from their work sites to their families, and as their wives and children greeted them at home, they would get exposure to asbestos. And over many years later, they would develop diseases like mesothelioma. So secondary asbestos exposure is also a risk for firefighters who might inadvertently expose their family at home.
Right. So if they're contaminating their gear, then that's really lowering the risk of their families contracting it.
Yeah, 100%.
Because they're not coming home with it. Yeah. Now, is there regular screening? I mean, have you any information as to whether or not firefighters are getting consistent, either biannual or annual screenings for mesothelioma or lung cancer?
Firefighters should be getting annual medical examinations just as part of their, suite of protective services afforded to them at work. They should always inform their healthcare providers about their occupation and what they do and any time that they're exposed to toxic materials in a new situation. So every instance that they might have been exposed to something, even if they took all the precautions with their gear and equipment, it's still important to notify their healthcare professionals that a new exposure occurred, just so that screening can continue as prescribed, and there can be an early detection for any type of developing disease.
What about resources for firefighters? So if you're either an active firefighter or you're a career firefighter who's retired, and you kind of suspect that you've got a lung issue, an asbestos issue, or you're just not feeling well, what are you aware of any resources or who they can contact that where they could learn more or kind of get a roadmap as to where they can go from there?
Yeah, there are several national firefighting associations that work with career firefighters to make sure they get medical coverage for any issues that crop up, even after they've retired. And, those are the International Association of Firefighters is probably the big one. There's also the National Fire Protection Association, the International Association of Fire Chiefs, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the Firefighter Cancer Foundation also. For firefighters that end up developing cancer years after they've retired.
Yeah, that sounds like some good resources. And you want to go to those organizations to help you out if you, God forbid, are diagnosed or suspect that you have mesothelioma or the other conditions we talked about. Sean, so can you give our listeners, our injured senior community, maybe two or three takeaways or tips that they can take with them if they suspect that they have mesothelioma? What do you think are two or three things that they should be doing first?
Sure. The first and most important thing is to always talk to your doctor. And that's either if you've had a history of asbestos exposure, either years ago or you were remodeling your house and some suspicious material came out of the walls. It's important to just notify your primary care doctor that you've had an exposure of some type, because that gets them to start thinking about what screening diagnostic screening exams they can start working with you on to make sure that any disease that does develop will be caught early. And if you're having symptoms of any kind at all, whether it's a dry cough, a productive cough, fevers, weight loss, anything out of the ordinary should also be brought up with your doctor too. Even if you don't have a known history of asbestos exposure, just because certain types of symptoms or signs will notify your doctor of what screening procedures to begin taking too. Another thing I like to tell patients too is that you should be aware of where asbestos risk occurs. Right. So most asbestos-containing materials used in houses and buildings were developed before the 1980s, before those regulations. So if you're living in an older house built before the 1980s, or you work somewhere that you know has asbestos-containing materials within it, it's just something to keep in mind. Even if you haven't been exposed directly or you don't have any symptoms, it's still important to know that, if in the case of a disaster or an emergency, that exposure could occur.
And if you suspect that you might have contracted meso or the like, what do they normally do? Do a chest X-ray, or do they do like a CAT scan, or what's the?
It typically depends on the severity of the symptoms or the severity of exposure that someone had. But the first things a doctor will order are most likely imaging exams, right? Like an X-ray or a PET CT. If there are masses that show up on the X-ray, so abnormal nodules will require higher imaging, like a PET CT or an MRI. And then after that, if there is some sign of an abnormal growth, the doctor will order a biopsy, which is not a very invasive procedure. It typically takes a few days of recovery, but a biopsy will inform the doctor whether it's malignant cancer and what type of cancer it is.
Okay, thanks for that information. Sean, we're kind of coming down to the end of the show. Can you tell our injured senior community a little bit about your organization, the Mesothelioma Center at asbestos.com?
Sure. We're at asbestos.com on the internet. And the Mesothelioma Center is a patient advocacy group. So we work with patients and caregivers of cancer patients and families that have all been affected by asbestos-related diseases, such as mesothelioma, lung cancer, asbestosis, even pleural thickening and the first signs of these diseases as well. So we help patients connect with physicians in their area, specialists that work with these diseases, and help them get a confirmed diagnosis and then get them started on the appropriate treatment for their disease. And that involves clinical trials with new and experimental treatments. And then we also help raise awareness, too, again, of the risk of asbestos in communities and the populations that are at risk, too, you know, veterans, first responders, and just, you know, the general population that might not know how prevalent the risk of asbestos is.
So asbestos.com should be added to the list of resources that you talked about earlier, because I've been on that website, been on your website, and just so much really, really helpful information and information that I just was not aware of.
Thanks. Yeah, we have guides first responders and guides for people who are maybe renovating a house or unsure of some of the materials in their house, too.
Okay. And is it also, if any of our listeners go to asbestos.com on social media, they'll be able to find it?
Yep. Asbestos.com, the Mesothelioma Center, has a Facebook page and a Twitter page. And we post all of our newest articles and best resources there for anyone who's interested.
Okay, thanks. If anyone has mesothelioma that's listening to this or suspects it, is it appropriate for them to contact your company, asbestos.com? Or are you just a resource that they just have to go online and just read material?
Oh, they can 100% contact us for sure. We have a team of patient advocates that are taking calls every day. They can call us at 855-972-6066. Or email us at patientadvocates@asbestos.com, and we'll answer any questions and help anyone who's interested in any aspect of asbestos-related disease connect with the resources that they need.
Sean, you are a wealth of information. I want to thank you again, because you have really been very valuable as far as giving us this type of information that we just need to know. So it's an open invitation. We're going to have you back for the trifecta for the third time, and we'll have to talk about what the subject will be. But it definitely will be a subject that will be of value to our injured senior community. So thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, it's a pleasure to get the word out and help the injured senior community, you know, understand the risks and then also the options that they have for these diseases.
Sounds good. So, injured senior community, if you'd like to connect with me about an injury or a condition, an occupational disease such as mesothelioma or asbestosis, feel free to email me at steve@injuredseniorhotline.com. Even if you've been a career firefighter or whatever your career is, you're a first responder, and you learned decades later that you were exposed to asbestos and then came down with asbestosis or mesothelioma, you can still make a claim, workers' comp claim. You can make potential claims against other third parties that were responsible for the asbestos exposure. So feel free to email me if you want to discuss that. Feel free to email me with any suggestions, my friends, about any subject matter or topic that you'd like covered or you'd like discussed on this show. Also, if you'd like to audition to be a guest on the Injured Senior Podcast, feel free to email me. We'd love to have any injured senior or caregiver or loved one of an injured senior come on and talk about the injured senior's experience, maybe some advice that that can be given to other injured seniors about the condition or injury or disease that you got as a result of the negligence of other individuals or entities. Finally, if you like the content that you heard today, and Sean Marchese was spot on, and it was definitely a five-star review from my end. I thought he really, really gave some great information. Head on over to our show notes, where you'll find a summary of today's show and any important links that we mentioned, including the resources that he talked about. Also, feel free to reach out to me again if you want to discuss anything about this podcast at steve@injuredseniorhotline.com. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. Thanks again for listening to today's show. Be sure to tune in to next week's show. Talk to you soon, and you have yourself a great week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Injured Senior Podcast with Steve H. Heisler. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate, subscribe, review, and share on Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. To find out more or to get help anytime, go to InjuredSeniorHotline.com or call 855-622-6530. We'll see you next time.